Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello and welcome to the Big Interview Q&A show. I'm Neil White and with me today are Graham Hunter, host of the Big Interview, and our guest with the A's for your Q's, Pete Jensen, who I hope you're all listening to and watching on La Liga TV. We have questions, as always, from our socios who support this podcast at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. And the first of them to step up to the plate is Jake Garlick, who asks, why have the wheels fallen off so badly at La Real? Perhaps we should, you know, lay down some facts. They've dropped to sixth. I think the last time we recorded, they were either still first or possibly they just dipped to second. And I think one win in 10 La Liga games.
Jakey, thanks for being in touch. And the first thing I want to say is Q&A stands for querulous and angry. And Pete's the querulous one. And Jake, for my money, it depends how you categorise wheels coming off. My opinion is that they've learned a lot from that 10-game spell, which preceded the 11th game to finalise last season, when things weren't good, they were predominantly losing, and they didn't have a clue why or how to react. And I want to leave room for Pete, because we haven't rehearsed this, but I kind of know where some of his answer is going to go, so I don't want to tread on that turf. But in my opinion, that lack of knowledge of how to seal a game, because, for example, they went in the derby and they won at St Mames, if I remember correctly, that they won away from home, 1-0 away from home. And when Caridi talked about it, he said, oh, we went back to basics, we defended and played long, and we knew that would unhinge them, and we knew that we would win, and we did. And I thought that was a healthy, not just beating Athletic in the derby, Mr. G. I thought that the coming up with a solution was important. And to come to the end of your period that you're talking about, Jake, when they played, you know, we're recording, so this won't be out before the second instalment of Real Sociedad Betis. But when they played Betis at this weekend, and it ended with Imanol doing a hold my jacket Glasgow pub style and throwing his anorak at the bench and stomping around the sidelines, because one of the most complete and interesting and dominant performances of the season, not just from La Real but from anybody, ended up with a 2-2 draw because Joaquin. I still think that we saw them beginning to get things right again. They didn't tuck away the victory then, but my opinion is that it's coming. And I'll flick at three things that I think are important and allow Pete to pick up. One, David Silva had an impact, and he had a particular impact on Janusai and the team's quality of play. He's been quite absent, mostly through injury. Oyarzabal remains, even with Silva at the club, their best player, their most important player, their leader in football and spiritual terms. And he went through a little spell where he was out of the team, needed to recuperate, got back and kind of in his terms, it was business as usual again. But in market terms, even though they've done that operation with William Jose to Jorge Mendes FC, Wolves, and brought in Carlos Fernandez, which seems, I think, probably net to probably be good business. Their market work hasn't been good enough at centre-back. And I don't like when players are misused just because you can use them in a second or third position. So Zubeldia has now got massive amounts of competition in central midfield, but he's not, is not, cannot be a central defender. And they've used him there in emergency and then become accustomed to using him there, and it's wrong, just plumb wrong. Pete, the hot potato. Did I ever tell you about the day that Rod Stewart threw a hot potato from the next door house onto our roof? I can come back to it if you want. Anyway, Baby Jane, the hot potato is coming your way.
I would go straight into the centre-backs, as Graham's finished on the centre-backs. I think when a team has a really good season, really, really good season, more often than not, they've had the same central defensive partnership throughout the entire campaign. You can dip into any era, any team, you know, and there's a Vidic Ferdinand or there's a Diego Carlos Koundé at the heart of why they had a good season. And I think about the first 10 games or so, Lenormand and Elustondo were playing alongside each other. And it wasn't just that they were both playing well. They seemed to have formed a really, really good partnership. And it's such a shame that, mainly because Elustondo has been injured, that partnership has disappeared and they just haven't been able to field it. And then, obviously, you get into Graham's point about then what do you do in the absence of that pairing. And the two other quick things, Silva, Graham's already mentioned it, and he helps them see out games because he keeps the ball so well and he's so clever and he's so competitive and he's so experienced and he was doing that at the start of the season, so to be without him for so long. And the other thing is William Jose. I was speaking to someone the other day who knows the club really well and just basically asking them, why is he always unhappy? Why does he always want to leave? This was before he left. And they said that, you know, he's never really fitted in at the club and he doesn't much like the competition with Isak. So maybe it's for the best that he's gone. Let's see how it works out with Carlos Fernandez. He was really impressive last season for Granada. He's not quite a number nine, or at least he wasn't last season for Granada. So how that works in the way that Iguacil wants to play, Imanol wants to play, we'll see. But I think those 3 points, not having a really strong second striker to be pushing Isak, the central defensive partnership breaking up and the absence of Silva. But also, as Graham says, you know, the wheels have not quite come off. They were brilliant at the weekend. And in that run of 10 games, by the way, 5 of them were draws. So, you know, they'll come back again. I'm sure they will. And they'll still be in that race for the top four.
I think we have to use our words, or at least my words, against ourselves. Because last time we spoke, I got awfully excited about the idea that there's this real clutch of badge-committed, home-trained young footballers who carry an identity, who are not just in the team a little bit like, say, Oleguer for Barcelona, because, well, you're one of ours and you're kind of handy. There's tremendous talent, which has been in the youth system, which, if I don't get mixed up, can I say Zubieta, Pete? Is that right?
You're right, yeah, Zubieta.
As I know Jake's question wasn't condemnatory, but I think in the trade that the three of us work, you have to be careful about how quickly you can expect the not a new generation flowering and looking pretty and all that kind of stuff, but how soon are they battle-hardened? How soon as a group are they going to be ready for the types of situations that Jake Carlett is looking at, and Pete's just said, look, they haven't been all that bad. They haven't been defeated all the time. And I think we're in the middle of a process. And I think that the younger players are in the process of finding solutions. And I don't think you can, you know, even a good coach, you can't demand that from them. They learn. They take. What did Brathwaite say to us today about using mistakes or failures as a springboard to be different, to be better? Well, that's happening in front of our eyes in a year where they've never played in a more odd situation. How many games a week? They had a really demanding Europa League group where they got through in the last minute against Napoli. They had no pre-season. They're youngsters. They're not anywhere near any of our three different ages. So they've got the same worries about grandparents and parents, and you know, and they're living in an odd situation. It causes me no surprise that La Real are patently a work in progress.
No one talks about that real life stuff, you know, in the middle of the pandemic. No one's talking about the fact that these are all groups of young men, you know, aged between, what, like 17 and 35, and they're all having to deal with all the stuff that we're dealing with. So, of course, sometimes...
Don't we as an industry get into, I know the word narrative gets overused, but a narrative of, it's now no longer even assumed or a subconscious tone of voice in the media that footballers are simply plastic toys to be taken out at the weekend on a Wednesday. It goes unspoken that their only duty is to pop out like a cuckoo clock. Well, it's Sunday at 6 o'clock or it's Saturday at 9 o'clock, and therefore, oh well, we're interested in, you know. One of the things that's happening with all the rows about footballers and COVID is that, you know, please God it continues, but amongst the young community, 17 to say 40, 45 in football, professional football around the world. So therefore, coaches who are still fit, members of the technical staff who are, you know, in good nick, plus players. So far, of all the infections that have been had, they seem to shrug it off really as if it was a common cold. That's not been the case in the broader population. But if one of us were a multimillionaire 22-year-old in football and you looked around, you'd think, well, we're immune. Because they all seem to shrug it off. So behaviour patterns and footballers struggling a little bit for understanding why am I distracted, why have I made a little mistake, why haven't I trained as well this week. Like you said there, Neil, that nobody ever talks about the fact they're actually human beings.
If I could make a slight sort of La Real bridge, if we look back at last season, obviously one of the players that lit up for them was Martin Odegaard, and it still looks like we're recording on the 26th of January. At the moment, it still looks likely that he might end the window as an Arsenal player on loan. No play from Madrid, it seems, to a permanent move. But from your point of view, if we look at the perspective of the player and both the clubs involved, Madrid and Arsenal, how does that move look to you guys? Pete, how about you?
I don't really understand it. If Odegaard has still got these tendonitis problems, and it's going to be a problem that's going to be with him, you know, until he has a prolonged rest, which will be at the end of the season, then I don't understand why Arsenal have come in for him and are paying what they're paying to take him to the end of the season. And if he doesn't have those physical problems anymore, and his desire to get away and to play suggests he doesn't, then I cannot understand why Real Madrid see no use for him in the second half of the season. We all know how wonderful the Modric, Casemiro, Toni Kroos midfield is, but it's not going to play every game for the rest of the season. Odegaard was sensational in the first half of last season. He was the best player in La Liga. And it's just beyond my comprehension why Zidane doesn't see how Odegaard is not going to help him get back. Well, they're still in the title race, overturn Atletico's lead in the title race and make a case for, you know, winning the Champions League. I just do not understand it. And I think it's, if he's fit, then it's a brilliant move for Arsenal. Unless Madrid are so seriously troubled financially that they're thinking, well, a quick 2 million, because you know what Arsenal are paying to have him for the rest of the season, and also if he plays really well, it will help us sell him at the end of the season.
I don't have any question that unless Zidane moves out at the end of the season, we've learned, just like we learned with Reguilon and Ashraf and Ceballos, which I can see, that once you're not in Zidane's sweet spot, then it's going to be lemons from there on in. That's just the way that he operates. And I don't mean to make that sound vindictive. And I think one of the the things I've learned and I heard repeated recently, but it's certainly one of the things that when Gianluca Vialli and Gabriel Marcotti were writing their book about football together that I helped on, they sat down with Alex Ferguson and he gave one of his best ever revelatory interviews, both on and off mic. And one of the things he said, and this was in a different time when he was speaking about himself differently, he said, I haven't always been better than my rival managers, but some of them don't understand the idea about shit or get off the pot. A lot of them, he said, prevaricate. They dither. They're afraid of the consequences of making a decision. He said, I weigh things up. I might make a mistake, but I'm not afraid of getting it wrong. But what I gain is grabbing the nettle and not putting it off almost always buys me advantage of some kind. And when I get it right, and I've got it right quicker than most of the people I'm up against. Great. Okay. So imperfection, but and not just momentum, bull in a china shop, head down. That avoidance of risk, that avoidance of, I don't want to put myself out there, is something we see on the pitch and we see in managers. And recently in an interview that will come out later, I spoke to, Monchi was the interview. And Monchi talked about being unafraid to trust people that he are in his team and go with them and accept the consequences. And I don't want to put Zidane up there with those two outright geniuses, but I think there's an element of that in Zidane's approach whereby, really, to be honest, I could be cruder about it, he doesn't give two fucks what anybody else thinks. And also, he's immune. So he takes decisions that have repeatedly looked odd. And Pete was really articulate there about the strange case of Martin Odegaard as written by Agatha Christie. But like, Ashraf's a good and impactful player and there's a place for him at that club and he's not there. Ditto Reguilon. I think we know that Reguilon blocked his copybook with one of Stan's boys a little bit, which can happen on a training ground, and yet there's been no forgiveness, there's been no clemency. And so when I look at Odegaard and Zidane, I think that there probably will be a gathering of money to throw at Mbappe at the end of the season. I think that the reason that Madrid have done this is that there's a general acceptance that once you're out with Zidane, you're out. And again, I don't mean it in a vindictive way, but he kind of makes his mind up. Why he's made his mind up on Odegaard, which was part of Pete's question, I don't know. But I do know that before he signed for Real Madrid the first time, Liverpool were obsessed by him. And they used Steven Gerrard to take him over to Melwood to show him round. And they put Steven Gerrard on the phone to him. And Odegaard and his dad were a bit bewitched. And Liverpool thought that of the two crown princes that were coming through at the same time, at the same youth tournaments, it was Pulisic and Odegaard. And Odegaard had all the profile because his dad was very mouthy. And Liverpool are of the opinion, still of the opinion, that they love him, that they would want him. He grew up a Liverpool supporter, and it was only his dad turning young Martin's mind at the last minute to Real Madrid that kiboshed that the first time. So I spoke to Liverpool this last 10 days, and they were like, wow, it's unbelievable. They felt like Pete did. It's unbelievable that he's not being used. It's unbelievable that he can't get a spot for the cup, at least to revindicate himself. But they weren't in. And they'll be watching really closely. And if he's for sale in the summer, which I think the portents are that he will be, they'll be in. For sure they'll be in. And, you know, he's at almost identical age with Pulisic. So that means there's enormous amounts still to come in terms of getting rid of this tendonitis and him establishing himself as a player who wants the ball, gets between lines and makes things happen. So I'm not brutally despondent because there's masses of time left for him to flourish and become special. But the right now question is I feel it's as odd as Pete does. Love to see him in that Arteta. I tell you, I'd love to see Arteta's off the scale as a coach. Arteta is off the scale good. And I tweeted about the shit that was being thrown at him during their bad run. Arteta is a standout, and if Barca don't get Xavi, they should be smashing Arsenal's door down. and Odegaard being coached by Arteta. All day long. Take that.
So we have a very clear link then to our next socio, who's Martin Seabright. Hi, Martin, and thanks for your question. He says, hola, when you analyse Zidane as a manager, what do you consider his strengths and weaknesses? He's won a lot of trophies, but at the same time, there appear glaring weaknesses in his use of his squad this year in particular. Now, look, this touches on a few of the themes that you've both talked about already in the question about Odegaard. But if we kind of broaden it out into... Zidane, what's the phrase that you used? Immune, Graham, a guy with this history at the club, both as a player and a record-breaking coach. When you look at this season and his record in the round, what do you see as his? I mean, we've tried to divine what it was that he had when he was at his peak, and now that he's experiencing a bit of difficulty, where do you think the weak spots are, Graham? Do you want to start?
Well, I will. Although I think. I'd be fascinated to hear what Pete says, because his view on Zidane has always caught my attention. I don't, you know, as is often the case, I can see grey areas in that. I don't think he's ever pretended to be one of the most strategically complicated football coaches. I think that he's perfect for Real Madrid, because Real Madrid as a club wants stars. They don't want a revolutionary new way to play 4-3-3. They don't want to be regarded as the open university with, you know, Buffon-type hair and a white lab coat. And so what I mean by that is they sign stars and they have players who behave like stars. And Zidane's team functions when individual clusters of stars shine. It's not very strategic. It's not very system-based. There are systematic aspects about a team sport. Of course there are. But Zidane's three great benefits at Real Madrid have been that he is the... I'm not afraid to use this expression again. He's the player whisperer. And that's why recent times have been annoying and confusing, because he has been able to make a series of footballers who are either good and could be better, raise their level, or a series of footballers who are slightly peripheral, believe that they have an opportunity, believe that it's worth being loyal to the cause, and believe that when they get given their opportunity, they'll step up. In modern football, those are enormous attributes, gigantic attributes, because it's all very well saying it's a squad game, but if a third of your squad thinks, I'm never going to get a fucking game... Now, Isco didn't think that about Zidane, but lately he's been caught saying it. The players who've been frozen out and moved on thought it. But the vast bulk of his squad for the longest time thought, if I work hard every day and subconsciously not even notice that I'm actually getting better every day because I'm working it every day, the virtuous circle, then when my chance comes, Zidane will tap me on the shoulder and I'll be good. The second thing that I think was really, really important is that one-on-one, I think he remains inspirational. He doesn't have to say very much. He's got a big physical presence. He's got the look that he gives players when he's talking to them, that direct focus. There are some people that when you give that direct focus to other people, it's electric. He's got that. And thirdly, and this is important at Real Madrid, it's a presidential club. And Zidane and Florentino, as unlikely bedfellows as Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito, it's worked. And that has meant that the squad has a buffer between them and their sometimes impetuous president. Not all coaches have that at Real Madrid. So combine all these things and the fact that he's got good players, and the club isn't expected to play systematically week in, week out the same way. They just want to win and entertain. He's been good for them. But recently, the fact that it's clear that a large part of his squad has felt a bit ostrich-sized, a large part of his squad has felt a little bit ignored, Certain footballers have been played until they're falling over. It's Pavlovian. They need to be... I've lived this way, so I recognise it. They need to put themselves in danger and teeter on the edge before they go, oh, I'm still here, don't worry, I'm still here, Happer. And that's not the way to win league titles. So recent weeks where he's gone same 11, same 12, same 11, same 12, week in, week out, has been odd. His players have showed that they think it's odd. And in the cup game, when they got knocked out, footballers who you should have been able to count on 100% didn't rise to the occasion. So these are odd times.
So, Pete, was that unbelievable result in the cup, was that emblematic of other problems, or can we set that aside and say, well, that's a freak, but there's this other stuff here that's probably broken too?
The cup, they've gone from one extreme to the other in Spain. The cup used to be a kind of free pass into the final for Barca Madrid. That was all they wanted. They wanted a Barca Madrid final. They did everything possible to make that happen. Seeded draws, the two legs, all the rest of it. And they've now gone to the other extreme, where it is actually very treacherous territory for the big teams. That's why Atletico have been knocked out and Real Madrid have been knocked out. Atletico, the pitch they had to play on, I don't know, 10 o'clock kickoff on a kind of 1980s style plastic pitch. So many other games to play, and it's just one leg. No surprise they get knocked out. Real Madrid out as well. The biggest criticism of Zidane, I think, is that I struggle to name a single young player that he has taken under his wing and moulded and improved and stuck with, because even now Valverde's out of favour. And that's the big doubt about him. Now, as Graham rightly says, he doesn't care that that's a doubt about him. He's won everything in the game as a player and as a manager, and he's not bothered. And he suits Real Madrid in the sense that, as Graham says, they don't want to reinvent football. And he has got that aura about him. He's got that kind of, you know, the Reddy Brakhav glow about him. You see him at the training ground, and you know the players are he's crossing the ball in, and they're pinging the volleys in, and the big broad smile on the face because they just scored from a Zidane assist, and he'll never ever lose that. The problem at the moment is that there's a disconnect between Zidane and what Zidane sees as the way forward and what the club sees as the way forward, because the club has invested in players around 1918, 1920 for the last 4 or 5 years and spent big money on them. Vinicius was 45 million, I think, as an 18-year-old. So they want to develop these young players, and Zidane doesn't seem to be able or too interested in doing that. And, you know, he has that loyal group. And every time his job is on the line, be that really on the line or be it on the line on the front page of Marca, the same players stand up. And it was the same at the weekend. They get knocked out of the cup. And who stands up to get him out of trouble? Casemiro gets the first goal. Benzema scores twice. Modric is absolutely brilliant. So what happens when those three... and in particular Benzema and Modric coming towards the end, Ramos as well. Beyond that, they're not building anything to replace those players. And Vinicius and Rodrigo and now even Valverde and Odegaard and the likes of Achraf and Reguilón and Marcus Llorente who have gone and Ceballos, you know, they're not looking like they're going to replace the Ramoses and the Modrices and the Benzemas. And Jovic is another example. He's scored in the two games he's played out on loan. So, you know, that's the question mark over Zidane. And, you know, he doesn't care because of what he's achieved. But that's why it's no surprise when you read, I think, Bild yesterday talking about Nagelsmann. And, you know, Graham's forgotten more about Nagelsmann than I'll ever know. But I'm probably not even saying his name right. But he's a young coach and works brilliant with young players. And I think that's, well, the way they'll go next. My only doubt about the theory that Zidane will definitely go in the summer, and some people believe that, is that whole special quality and that whole aura thing does help them get players. And if Mbappe is the man they want more than any other, does it help them get Mbappe that Zidane is still the coach? But that aside, I think they're already thinking about, we need a younger coach, or at least a coach who works better with younger players.
Okay, guys, one more for part one of this month's Q&A, and it's from our sponsors, Bet365. Who, and feel free to look beyond Spain if you'd rather, or focus in La Liga, who has done the best deal of the window so far? So, done deals, in your opinion, the best or even the most interesting transfer, and someone's open to whoever comes up with their name first.
It's not Rangers who've taken Scott Wright off the Mighty Dandies, because anybody that we're unable to retain doesn't need retaining. So if we start at home, there hasn't been an awful lot of business. Best business. We talked about Carlos Fernandez. If socios and sponsors don't know much about him, he's Sevilla bred. Played very well, very excitingly at Granada. Looked rangy. Looked as if he had that ability to, without being a central striker, as Pete pointed out, come onto the ball, arrive late, cause chaos. And at La Real, with the ability to use the ball that they've got, I like his chances of looking pretty sexy. I think that, I don't know if it's called a signing as far as sponsors are concerned, Bet365, but Barcelona have the chance to promote and therefore make a signing out of Ilax Moriba from their youth academy and play him in centre midfield. And Conrad as well, who I think has a possibility of moving to Valladolid. I like Conrad. I think he's very skilled. I think in the last 16, 18 months, he's added brains to go with the technique that made him eye-catching before. Pete, Athletic can't bring anybody in. I can't remember if Betis have taken anybody.
There are a couple. The one that's happened, but he hasn't started playing yet, who is exciting, and one that may happen. The one that may happen, Papu Gomez. I mean, if he goes to Sevilla, then that's a potentially sensational one. And Atletico taking Moussa Dembélé. I mean, that also is potentially really big as well, because Suarez is doing brilliantly at the moment. But I mean, he's got 12 goals in 16 shots. I mean, as good as he is, that's not going to go on for the whole season, surely. And, there are certain games when they want somebody to run beyond and when they need a different sort of striker, and Moussa Dembélé could be that man. And, it didn't go too well for them last night, because we're recording this, 12 hours after Getafe got beat 5-1 by Athletic. But I'm excited by Alenia and Kubo going there. Let's see how Bordalas works it out. He's playing them at the moment. He didn't seem very excited at all about Kubo's signing originally. He kept on referring to it as the club want to bring him in, but he played again last night. So, as I say, it didn't work too well last night, but maybe that gives them something a little bit different. There's things going on. Betis, Graham, I don't think they have brought anyone in at the moment.
I don't think they've done anything, because they have a clutch of players who are on 3.5 million a year net. So they desperately, desperately need to get rid of footballers before they can even think about bringing anybody else in. So, Pete, having sharpened my head, I wish I could be saying the same about Kubo, because I adore him as a footballer. But Ángel Torres, the Madrid-supporting Getafe president, has done Real Madrid a turn. I think, and this is a slightly lateral answer to our sponsor's question, I think Bordalas isn't far off the sack, as mad as that sounds, because of what Ángel Torres is like. I think Kubo was taken in with the idea that it would probably be another coach coaching him. Kubo and Bordalas aren't going to get on. I don't think there's any question of that, therefore I'm depressed about it. I don't really want Bordalas to be sacked. He's done amazing things at Getafe, and the idea of him getting back to basics and playing the way that they always did, with maybe one extra signing. And Alenia is a different footballer from Taki Kubo, and has the nous about him to add the little paprika that the mix needed at Getafe, for sure. But I'm really depressed about it. I think it's going to be Taki, or it's going to be Bordalas. Papu's a great shout, because he's pure anarchy and pure invention and cleverness. And with him playing around Suso and Endaziri, and who do I enjoy watching? Ocampos is a complete football nutcase. Whether Papu Gomez helps unlock the preternaturally slow Luke de Jong or not, I don't know. But this guy is such a fantastic, exciting, now relatively senior footballer. But I spoke to Duvan Zapata, I interviewed him for UEFA, that the striker at, I'm certain, Colombian striker at Atlanta at the beginning of the season, he was ranting and raving about playing next to this, just this pocket genius in Papu Gomez. So Monchi strikes again. And as far as the other leagues, I don't know. I don't know who's moved in England. There's not a lot of traffic, is there?
The most notable January move, probably you've talked about already, guys, to be honest, which is William Jose to Wolves, and then probably Ozil leaving Arsenal being the other one, and potentially Odegaard. So we've sort of treaded a lot of that ground already.
I mean, I'm not enjoying the conservatism that Unai Emery is showing at Villarreal, but they're enjoying the results. And they've had such brutal luck with Coquelin never quite looking fully ready. He's been tending an injury, playing through an injury. And then Ibora, who's vital, getting injured. And then to sign Capu, is you see exactly what he's meant to do. And if he allows Dani Parejo the platform to keep being himself, and Chukwueze gets back in the team, and Gerrard starts scoring in him, and a little Paco starts scoring again, then Capu can be the rock upon which a really exciting yellow submarine can build for the remainder of the season. But it isn't. Who are you in love with in that little?
You said my favourite. As soon as his name comes up, I have to react. Parejo is it's my guy.
Oh, different class. And listen, there's one that maybe we should finish on, because he isn't going to show that he was signed in this window, but it's Dimitrovic. Dimitrovic is going to be a Sevilla player for the next 3 years. He's going to join them on freedom of contract at the end of the season. That signing's done, as far as I understand it now. And in my opinion, aside from his penalty-taking skills, which he showed against Atleti in midweek, I think Dimitrovic is an Oblak quality goalkeeper, except he hasn't been playing in an Atleti side that diminishes the number of chances or one-on-ones that you've got to face by 35-40%. And Dimitrovic is as good as Oblak. You could take Oblak out for 100 million euros, put him somewhere where a team is willing to pay that, and you could put Dimitrovic in instead of Oblak at Atleti, and nobody would miss a beat. He's that good. So Monchi strikes again.
Okay, that's it for the first part of this month's Q&A. We'll be back tomorrow, actually, with more from Pete and Graham. Thank you to both of you. Thank you to the socios who sent questions in, and thank you for listening. Have a good day. Bye-bye.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Mother's Day is just around the corner, and it's time to pamper the special moms in your life. And what better way than with Osea's limited edition skincare sets featuring clean, vegan, cruelty-free products that are safe for your skin and the planet. Osea is a women-founded, women-led brand that's been making seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. This Mother's Day, Osea has two limited edition sets, perfect for gifting or keeping for yourself. Their Golden Glow body set includes three clinically proven bestsellers for silky, smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set has everything she needs to achieve spa-level results at home. They're so beautiful, you can skip the wrapping. For a limited time, you can save up to $48 on Osea sets, plus get free shipping. That's Mother's Day made easy. Pamper the moms in your life and get 10% off your first order site-wide with code MOM at OseaMalibu.com. That's OSEAMalibu.com, code MOM.